This podcast you're about to listen to was produced by Nelcon Media.
Hello everyone, you good people out there. Welcome to All Things Naija. This is our second podcast show after our inaugural, which I am almost sure you all enjoy. I use the word almost advisedly because we must have a place for some level of humility in our discourse. I hope you found our last podcast on Nigeria's educational situation interesting. In this episode, we are discussing an issue that has both domestic and international ramifications. It is the issue of the ongoing violence in Nigeria. Terrorism, banditry, herdsmen, kidnappings have been elements involved in this process. For the purpose of clarity and context, I have decided to make a distinction between terrorism as signified by Boko Haram and banditry and herdsmen. Kidnapping is sometimes a trend that cuts across all three. The issue in discourse today is insurgency, terrorism, banditry, and the Nigerian state. In the course of this program, we will have the company of one of the foremost security experts in the country, Onyekachi Adekoya, who hopefully will help us remove some of the web surrounding Nigeria's precarious security situation. What can anybody say about Nigeria's many security challenges? In 2020, the Global Terrorism Index designated Boko Haram as the third most dangerous terrorist organization in the world. The herdsmen is not so far in notoriety either. Perhaps the frightening aspect of these challenges is that people are beginning to see the situation as intractable, unsolvable, unresolvable. This is not because the violence and killings have gone on for over a decade now, but because the argument has been made that the weakness of the Nigerian state and institutions of state are indicative of a failed or failing state. Obviously, a failing or failed state is not in a position to arrest the spiraling violence. Most worrisome is the government's several false claims on the status of the war effort. The President Muhammadu Buhari, the Minister of Information Lai Mohammed, and the Chief of Army Staff General Tukur Buratai have at various times claimed victory against the terrorists. Please listen to the insights from both the President and Tukur Buratai.
You can put it in a nasty way as you want, but I assure you we haven't failed. Adamawa state, Yobe state are free from Boko Haram. Borno, which is their base, I think they have 2 to 3 local governments. Boko Haram has reverted to using IEDs, improvised explosive device, indoctrinating young girls from 15 years and below to go and explode it in churches, in mosques, in marketplaces, in motor parks. They have now been reduced to that. But articulated conventional attacks on centers of communication population in towns and so on, they are no longer capable of doing that effectively. So I think technically we have won the war because people are going back into their neighborhoods. We have a committee on the ground liaising with local governments through the state and so on. People are going back. Our major problem now is rehabilitation, with over 1.5 million people, internally displaced persons, repairing the infrastructure, the schools, the health centers, the number of bridges blown. That's what we are facing now. But Boko Haram, as an organized fighting force, I assure you that we have dealt with them.
Look at what we have on the ground. Before May 2015, the Boko Haram were even in Abuja. They were in Kano. They were in Kaduna. They were penetrating down up to the south. Okay? We had to stop them. Mm. And for the past 1.5 years, you've not had any attack in Jos, no, either in Abuja or Kano or many other places, even as close as Gombe. You know, where there have been several attacks, you never had it. Now they are only concentrated within, certain areas in Borno State.
Just last Saturday, claims United Nations About 110 farmers were gruesomely killed in Borno State. Many women are also suspected to have been kidnapped by the terrorists during the same attack. The government of President Muhammadu Buhari is not beyond suspicion over its many failures to protect the people and communities, most especially in the north, the epicenter of violence. Be it in the guise of Boko Haram, herdsmen, bandits and kidnappers. Certainly, the inconsistencies, actions and non-actions of the government have combined to heighten people's loss of confidence in the government. It is as a result of these inconsistencies, especially over the refusal of the president to replace the service chiefs, that the Catholic Bishops' Conference declared in 2018, quote, "Since the president who appointed the heads of the nation's security agencies has refused to caution them even in the face of the chaos and barbarity into which our country has been plunged, we are left with no choice but to conclude that they are acting a script that he, the president, approves of. If the president cannot keep our country safe, then he automatically loses the trust of the citizens." They continued, the president should no longer continue to preside over the killing fields and mass graveyard that our country has become. Of course, there is no guarantee that the replacement of the service chiefs is itself a guarantee of immediate success in the war that has now lasted more than a decade. It at least sends a message to members of the armed forces, especially the top brass. It also sends a message, even if somewhat symbolic, to the Nigerian people, that the president is angry and saddened by the inability of the service chiefs to turn the tide. It is no longer a matter of debate that the battle against violent insurgency, banditry and herdsmen has become one big flourishing business for all sorts of diverse interests, domestic and foreign. It has been speculated that the military generals, politicians have and are still profiting from the conflict. This is the nature of all wars and conflicts, most unfortunately. Approaches to tackling the issue have been as confusing, uncoordinated, as well as both bizarre and deeply troubling. One of such was the bill earlier this year by the senator representing Yobe East, Ibrahim Gedan, which sought to set up a national agency for the education, rehabilitation, de-radicalization and integration of repentant insurgents in Nigeria. Even though it passed first reading at the Senate, there has been very serious opposition across many quarters in the country. It is seen as an attempt to reward the terrorists and killers of our soldiers and people, even while the killings are still going on. At least this is how it is being seen by Nigerians. Again, for a relative period of time, there was information, even in the mainstream media, that government was absorbing the so-called repentant Boko Haram into the Nigerian army. As alarming as this was, the authorities kept mute, refusing to say anything about it, only to eventually come out with a denial when the story had reached a troubling crescendo. But there is an old African saying that there is no smoke without fire. Over the years, Nigerians have seen minor smoke become huge balls of fire. We are watching. The death toll, as well as the economic losses to these acts of violence, have been devastating. A Guardian newspaper report of the 15th February 2019 indicates that in 2016, an estimate of 1.6 million people were displaced in various camps in three states, with a larger percentage being women and children. Among the 7 million affected people in Northeast Nigeria, about 1.7 are women and girls of childbearing age who need sexual and reproductive health services. These are expected to have doubled at this time. The direct consequence of the influx of IDPs, internally displaced persons, has been the simultaneous increase in food insecurity, poor health services, poor water supply and sanitation in the registered camps. The death toll has been devastating. Rape, plunder and sacking of whole communities have been features of these acts of terrorism. What is to be done? Mr. Onyekachi Adekoya is in the house to shed greater light on the issue and to give us an idea or ideas about what is needed to be done to return Nigeria to the path of normalcy. Mr. Onyekachi.
So the military and the director of defense intelligence are quite aware of the task at hand, and they know what is required to prosecute this war. So I think we are pretty much playing a waiting game. And from my reading of the situation now, is the military has gotten to a point where it can go no further, which is why we see the change in strategy in having super camps, which is a move, a departure from the forward operating bases they had around the northeast. The problem with the initial strategy was that they didn't have the tools to multiply force and provide good logical support to the troops on the field. So you initially you had small units of fighting men at the place trying to counter the insurgents as they operate. But you know, once the military spread itself too thin, it didn't even have the logistics or close air support that was required to prosecute that strategy. So I think it's just a matter of time before we deal with these issues. Now, the issue of security is not just only, doesn't rest only on the issue of defense. Defense is just is a sect of security. Human security is now where the world security is going to. And when you talk about human security, you talk about the person, the individual, his basic survival toolkit, as it were. So you look at the absence of loss or harm, then you look at the ability to fend for himself and his family and have shelter and have clothing and, you know, and have medical care, which is why in 2019, the government recognizing the new trend or the paradigm shift, develop a national security strategy that pushed human security as a pillar upon which Nigeria's security approach will run, which is a departure from state-centric approach. So in terms of understanding the issues, I think that we are having a better sense of what needs to be done. The real issue now is the capability and the capacity to bring some of these fine aspirations we have in print to life.
Okay, good. Let me even intervene. You talked about the very last thing you said about having all these good measures in print, and so that has, you know, it's not so much something that is limited to military strategies or with regards to the fight against terrorism. Eventually, yeah, everything we do in this country, people talk about wonderful policies, whether it's in education, whether it's in healthcare infrastructure and all that. And yet it is the same result at the end of the day. Nothing concrete actually comes out of it because of the implementation. Now, but the issue is when you talk about capacity, you talked about the support given at a particular point in time in Liberia to the UN, you know, by the UN and the other international bodies and the rest. But we've also had support, because the issue of terrorism is not a domestic issue. It is an international issue, and the international community takes it very, very serious because of the possibility of replicating what happens in less developed countries of Africa, you know, in other parts of the world, Europe and America. Once they increase capacity at home, the tendency to export it to other parts of the world is also here, is also there. So all of these international bodies are very much involved, either it's in the area of reconstruction or in the area of providing logistics, you know, for the country. And so they have also had their fair share. You talked about the military spreading itself too thin. A country like Nigeria, 200 million people, I mean, in terms of population, the impression one has is that in terms of personnel, Nigeria has been tearing down its armed forces for quite some time. And so maybe that's what you meant when you talked about capacity. But the question that I want to ask is this. You have tended to paint the military in rosy pictures. I mean, what they have been doing, you know, and that seems to me a little bit political, where is the issue? Because people have talked about all wars being, I mean, people profiting from wars and all that. So it is not just a Nigerian issue. Every war, guns are manufactured, they have to be sold. There are contractors who also have to make money. In some instances, especially in third world countries, army generals and military personnel are also making money, and there have been these speculations, even in mainstream media in Nigeria, that the generals, a lot of people are making money, so it's in the interest of some of these people, even the politicians, to allow this thing to fester, you know, for quite some time. Now, where is the issue of politics in the inability of the military to stem the tide? Because you talked about, yes, they seem to be performing well under very serious circumstances. But sometimes some of these things, these efforts are being also being undermined by the politics at play in the country. Are you saying that that is not an issue and cannot be an issue?
Well, Achike, I think you want to... You are asking a question. At the same time, you are also advancing a position. I'm not a politician. I don't work for the military. I work in security. I'm a fellow in different institutes in security, and I will tell you as it is.
Yeah.
There is a politics of security. I agree.
Okay.
There is a politics of insecurity, which I also understand very well. However, if you are saying, why has this matter festered on the ground? My answer is very clear. When I talk about capacity, I'm talking about the fighting efficiency of the force that we have. Whether it be in training, munition, equipment, even supply and logistics. Listen, you cannot prosecute a war. The army logistics unit or any logistics unit for any paramilitary or military is the lifeline. It's like the heart.
That's
logistics
true.
Is at the heart of everything. So when you look at the exercise crisis in Lagos, why has the police not in Nigeria? Why has the police not become fully operational? Because logistically they've been severely incapacitated. So we are fighting. The Northeast is very big. We have, yes, a population of over 200 million people. I agree. We have a military force of about maybe 150,000 plus or minus, less than 200,000, I would say. We have a police force of about 330,000 plus or minus, thereabout. But if you look at the 2021 budget as it stands today, the 2021 budget, Nigeria will spend 5.6 trillion on recurrent expenditure. We are looking for about 50% deficit funding for the 2021 budget, and we have a huge debt burden. The government makes an argument measuring debt to GDP and saying they are fine. But when you look at debt to revenue, we are in a very precarious situation.
Yeah.
But what is my point? My point is you need money to prosecute a war. Yes, I know there is corruption. Yes, I know we say the international community are supporting. They are supporting in terms of sharing intelligence to the extent they want to share,
yeah,
and to the extent that it benefits them. They are supporting in terms of the humanitarian agencies and NGOs working within the theater of operation. Yes, they are providing support. But let us look at munition support. The Nigerian government has made several appeals to the United States, to some European countries, for the sale and purchase from them of certain needed munition. We don't have in this country up to 15 attack helicopters. In this country, we have an almost obsolete air force. That still, the pride of our air force is the Alpha Jet. Those Alpha Jets don't have a long endurance lifetime. At a quick burst, the worst the Alpha Jet can do, it's about 1 to 3 hours. So they take off from Adamawa, they fly to the theater. That guy doesn't have more than 15 minutes for a sortie. He has to head back before he goes out of gas. We don't have equipment to refuel some of these aircraft in the air. And some of those aircraft themselves don't have the capability for over-the-air or over-the-air refueling. So we are looking at munitions. You are dealing with a Boko Haram force that is well entrenched within the Sambisa forest and Lake Chad region. You are dealing with people who have very sophisticated munitions. we are talking about French interest. Where does it intersect American interest? We are in the middle of a geopolitical chess match between America and China, and Nigeria is smack in the middle. We have a couple of air assets, naval platforms from China, but some of those things themselves have their own limitations. America can equip Nigeria today if it's in America's interest. So what I just want to say is we mustn't believe everything we see on the paper. What the military needs to prosecute this war is standoff munition. Quote me as I said, standoff munition. We need hardened helicopter gunships. What are we talking about? Nigeria, yeah, as the giant of Africa, we don't have up to 15 operational helicopters. And you want to prosecute a war?
Yeah, you know, when you talk like this, it gives, yes, us really an idea of how dire the situation in the country is.
The situation is very dire.
It is dire, you know, and it is also sad. It's also sad that we find ourselves actually in this situation. I understand.
Permit me to cut you a bit.
Yeah.
My sincere apologies.
No.
Do you remember when we saw a serving major general?
Yeah.
And then I think it was the theater commander.
Yeah.
He was in the trenches.
Yes.
A video was made. He was there in the trenches with his men.
Yeah.
And saying, we are here. All we need is support.
Yeah.
That alone tells you the depth of the problem.
Of the crisis.
Do you know how many, do you know what it cost Nigeria to lose a colonel?
Yeah.
The years of training in the NDA, the years of courses and training, the experience to lose majors, to lose senior officers, the ultimate sacrifice that the military is paying on the field. No, the military is not saying they are afraid of dying. Give us a fighting chance.
Yeah.
That's all they are clamoring for. So, I mean, we can sometimes, you know, postulate and make certain comments until you are on the ground in the trenches, battling. You are battling an insurgent, a swarm of insurgents. They have like 20 mounted guns against your position. Your armored tanks, whatever it is that has been brought to you, maybe fired one or two shots, then combusted in itself. Your assets you have on ground are completely failed. Your 50 caliber machine gun is jamming. And all you have to confront these people on 20 mounted trucks are just AK-47.
Okay, good. You know, so in a way, I think you expressed some optimism, really, the very first time you spoke about, first of all, is the will. The will is sometimes different from the capacity and the ability.
Absolutely.
You know, so we separate it. Our people have the will. Our soldiers, especially our fighting forces, have the will. They showed it in Cameroon. I mean, in Sierra Leone, they showed it in Liberia. At a time, they were described as one of the best ground fighting forces in the world.
Yes.
You know, and that was the truth then at that particular point. And I understand what you also talked about, supply lines, the vast, you know, areas, operational areas in the northeast and the rest. And so if they do not have adequate supply lines for materials and men and the rest, there's going to be a problem. I think Russia or the Germany Atlantic the hard way when they invaded.
Absolutely.
Russia. When they invaded Russia and they couldn't get men and the equipment across the line and the rest. And that end, it is, you know, was a disaster for them.
Absolutely.
Now the issue is this. Oftentimes, even Nigerian security personnel, inspectors general of police in the past have talked about the need for the government to do something about the economy. Because the economy, a decadent economy, a moribund economy, seems to be the feeding ground for this kind of activities, you know. And that comes to the issue of counterinsurgency measures. And from counterinsurgency measures, the impression people have is that it's just about military tactics. You know, it's about military tactics and all that needs to be done. But counterinsurgency measures also involves the social, like winning the hearts and minds of the people also at the same time. So there is the, you know, application of that to win the hearts and minds of the people. That means job provisions, that means employment and all of these other things, also rehabilitation efforts and the rest, apart from purely military response to the issue. And it would appear at this level, because even when you look at it from a security perspective, you are also aware of the things that are leading to this insurgency. You're also aware of those things that make people want to join in an insurgency and all that. So how can you marry the two at the same time?
That's fine. Absolutely, you are very correct. The issues in economics, we talk about non-institutional constraints or non-institutional factors that really impede on some policy direction. In this case, now we're talking about the hardline security and the soft side to it. You can only provide security within a context. If macroeconomic conditions are not good, then you create conditions for other vices to thrive, because man at his very basic level has to bother more with the issues of survival and self-sustenance. And once you push people to that stage, then it's not like we're supporting certain things, but you then have to begin to battle with a different level of complexity. Now this is where we are, and root cause of our problem. If you look at Nigeria, yes, every region has its own peculiarity, but the question is, why has insurgency and armed banditry continued to fester in the north? Why the north in particular? The numbers don't lie. The indices will show you that the northern region has the highest level of poverty in Nigeria. Indices will also show you that they have the highest level of illiteracy in Nigeria. Now, what the other indices would not show you is that there is completely a failure of local governance in the north, because the local government structure is almost non-existent and nature abhors a vacuum. So you have large swaths of land, large spaces. Some local governments are almost as big as half of Lagos. And then there is no sense of presence, government presence to the people. The people don't even know there's a government. There are those people who cannot even recite the national anthem, who are Nigerians, who can't recite the pledge of Nigeria, and they're Nigerians. They are there living, trending, surviving, and they don't care about Nigeria. They care about self-survival every day. Most of us Nigerians don't know the name of our local government chairman. In our case, in Lagos State, you don't even know the name of the LCDA chairman. But this tier is a tier of governance that takes direct from source, from the revenues that accrue to the Federal Republic of Nigeria, with little or no accountability. And this issue of lack of accountability is made worse in the north. And we always say nature abhors a vacuum. So no governance, nothing. I mean, all sorts will begin to thrive. And that's why this is festering in the north and will continue to fester, because the political class continues to subjugate the people and keep them bound for political expediency.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think I really appreciate it. The very last thing maybe I would want to ask you about is this discordant tunes from the government today. Is it the right thing? Is it perhaps they are trying to shore up public confidence and not get people too frightened about what is going on? I mean, there's always the tendency for government officials, including the president, the minister of information, to tell us about the level of successes they have had, you know, against the insurgency in the country. They tell us it's been technically defeated, you know, or that it has been decimated reasonably well and all that. And then even the chief of army staff, Buratai, had at one time or the other also told us about how they had been able to stifle insurgency. But shortly after that, we have a more horrendous response from these people. Should that be the position of government, or should government be much more open about the problems to the people?
Well, the truth be told, no government in this world tells you all the problems that they have or the issues that they're having to deal with at any time, even for the sake of public safety. You know, government should be seen to be doing something, and should also be seen to be reassuring the public, you know, that, you know, certain things are being done. Otherwise, if you create a panic in the country, people may resort to anarchy and self-help. So, you can't fault the government. Even the U.S. government, also in the height of their crisis with the coronavirus, you know, President Trump says you must show leadership and provide some level of reassurance to the people while you are battling with the issues. I'm sure that in the other meetings with the security chiefs, I do hope that the government, the president, the governors, and everyone are getting the real picture of what is happening on ground, and they know the truth, at least within themselves, and they know what they need to do, which, I mean, that's another kettle of fish again. Because the political class, they are beginning to understand now the issues. Just I think yesterday, a Northern group passed a vote of no confidence on the president on the issue of security. Just this last week, an APC chairman was killed, a PDP chairman, a party local government chairman, so was also killed. We are also in a state of mourning in this country, because over 100, the UN reports that about 110 Nigerians, farmers, were slaughtered in cold blood. So the chicken is coming home to roost gradually.
That was on Saturday, yeah.
Yes, and so now even you are now hearing the clamor from the northern elite on the need for state police, because it is clear. The assumptions we held on security 5 years ago are no longer tenable. Nigeria is now a nation of over 220 million people.
Yeah.
So now, when I said I understand the politics of security and insecurity, now nobody wants to play politics with security.
Yeah.
Governor Zulum's convoy has been attacked at the last count at least 4 times. He is having an ongoing battle with the insurgents as he tries to reclaim back his state. You see, so it's a battle of wits. It's a battle of hearts and minds. He needs the people back in their farms, in their community.
Okay. Now, I wanted that to be the last, but something just came to my mind, and that's the very absolutely last question I'm going to ask. You will think that in the midst of all of this, at least if not for any other thing, let it be a symbolic, you know, gesture. Just like you have said, even if today you change service chiefs, for instance, it might not make so much of a difference because of the issues that you have enumerated. It goes beyond even that. But is it not at least for the purpose of even political expediency and also telling the people that I'm angry enough about what is going on? People have often talked for how many years now? The service chiefs are not delivering. Why not have a change of service chiefs? Why not allow that happen? Why do you think the president has been so hell-bent? Perhaps there is something he knows that we don't know. I don't know. Why do you think from that perspective he has remained intransigent?
Perhaps there's something you also know that I don't know, because constitutionally, the president has the power to retain the service chief and sack them at his will. So.
Yeah.
You know, maybe, I mean, we shouldn't be pandering to all this suggestion of regime protection. Let's look at the real issues. I understand that sentiment. And I tell you what, if I'm the president of Nigeria, I wouldn't change the service chiefs, because the service chiefs are not the issue.
Okay.
The president is the commander in chief. Can we go straight to the heart of this issue? The service chief reports to the president. The president is the CAC, he's ultimately responsible for the security or otherwise of lives in Nigeria. The 100 people that died in Borno State on the table of the president. The level of insecurity in the Northwest put on the table of the president. Whatever insecurity challenges we have, it's on the table of the president.
You know, I think that reminds me of the statement Ibrahim Babangida made in the wake of the annulment of the June 12th election and all the criticisms and protests that were happening all over the country and had to address the nation. He said something that is significant that I still remember. He said, look, so many things happened, so many complexities that led to the annulment of that election. But because he's the president of Nigeria, the buck stops at his table.
Absolutely.
I think, you know, that was very, very apt. So I want to leave it at this. It's been wonderful engaging somebody with so much, diverse abilities, especially when it comes to...
actually,
please do.
Just to, again, just qualify my statement. The president is constitutionally one of the most powerful presidents in the world.
Yes.
He has all he needs. He has all that he needs constitutionally to ensure the safety of life and property. And if he so determines that sacking the service chiefs will help him achieve that, the buck stops at the table. And if he retains them because he feels retaining them or changing them is not the issue, the buck still falls at his table. So it's the president we must hold responsible, not the service chiefs. Because look at the constraints enumerated.
Yeah.
Yes, we can have ingenuity, we can have other ways, innovative ways of confronting this issue. I don't know if you employ technicians or technical persons sometimes. You will think because they are technicians, they are all-knowing. No. Even as the owner of the job, your input is still required.
Yeah.
Your insight as to what exactly it is you want is still required. When you go to a tailor, you say, I want this design. The tailor's work is to sew and produce the design. What is the design the president has asked his tailors, in this case, the services to make for him?
Well, Adekoya Onyekachi, very well put. I really appreciate this. It's been quite enlightening talking to you on this. And you can be sure that if there's a need, we'll always want to come back to you. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.
Much,
thank you.
Well, in obedience to the laws of gravity, it is said that everything that goes up must come down. What has a beginning has an end. This episode of All Things Niger had a beginning that unfortunately has come to an end. So we most reluctantly say goodbye to all you ardent listeners out there. Thank you. They will come at you with a much more interesting episode the very next time. It's bye. Have a good rest of the day.